This is Bea Arthur, and you're listening to the Be the Change podcast, sponsored by Sonos. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Be the Change. My name is Bea, and I want to change your life. And in today's episode called Jesus and Jezebel, you know what, ladies first, Jezebel and Jesus, we are going to be talking about the trauma, the spiritual, and the war between spiritual and sexual needs. A lot of time, especially in American cultures, Western cultures, where women are raised in shame-based religions, it does affect how they develop their sexual attitudes as adults. And so we have a fantastic caller who is just learning to be curious later in life, and we have the perfect person to talk her through her issue. Joining me today is my good friend and purity movement expert, Linda K. Klein.
Hello. I feel like I should be running in and the curtain opens.
She literally did run in. This is my white friend who has CP time. But we love her just to say, Linda, I love you so much. I love the work you're doing. Please tell the audience about it.
Sure. So my story actually begins growing up because I was raised in a white American evangelical Christian church, and I was raised unknowingly at the beginning of the purity movement, which people may or may not be familiar with. This is a movement that was born out of the white evangelical church with the intention to protect young people from AIDS and other STIs and teen pregnancy by essentially shaming them mm-hmm. around sexuality with this notion that you would either be pure or impure, mm-hmm. right?
About the Madonna, the nun whore complex.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But and what you hear in both of those examples is it's about who you are, right? It's not about the choices you make. It's not about what you do. It's about your embodied self. Mm-hmm. Are you the Madonna, right? Mm-hmm. Or are you the whore? Are you pure or are you impure?
Is it definitive?
That's right, mm-hmm. yeah. So I was raised in the movement and struggled with it the whole time and experienced sexual shame and fear and anxiety and was under the impression that those things were healthy and good for me.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you know, because there's something really interesting about being raised within this culture where sexuality is so taboo, is so shameful, that when you experience shame and association with it, you know, your reaction is, yes, good, as it should be. Right.
Wow.
And then when I ended up leaving the community because I started to really complicate and question that equation, mm-hmm. I was under the impression that now I would suddenly be free from all that sexual shame and fear and anxiety. Not the case.
You were still a prude.
Well, I had so deeply internalized the shame that it actually didn't matter what I did, right? Whether
you
I
couldn't
was
feel good about it.
Yeah, I couldn't feel good about it.
Wow.
There was a huge triggering of that. You know, to use, since we're talking with you, Bea, to use a sort of psychological term, there's the idea of a brain trap. Is this something that you talk about sometimes? Yeah. So it's actually a neurobiology term called Hebb's axiom that says neurons that fire together wire together. So essentially, if two things are done simultaneously often enough, or an action and a thought, or any other number of sort of twinned things, eventually those things become fused for the person. And that's called a brain trap. They are physically trapped together.
So it's a Pavlovian response.
Yeah, in many ways. Or it's a shaping of your neural pathways.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know, I don't usually think men are that smart, but in this case,
it was
by design. They wanted women to not feel pleasure, and that way they don't have to worry about performing or being good lovers. They just get to force it on you, and you feel bad, and you stay like attached to them because of the shame. Because if think about it, it's kind of like what they do in Africa with like female mutilation. They scrape off the clitoris because they know that's where they don't want women to enjoy pleasure. They want to be the only ones to enjoy pleasure.
Well, that's a really interesting part about it, because within the purity movement, not only is sexuality and the body shamed, but actually feelings and pleasure in association with those things are shamed. So there is a real sort of complexity of, as a religion of the heart, it's not just about what you do. It's about, you know, it's again, back to that who you are. So when I left, I thought I would be free from these things. And what I discovered is that I had so deeply internalized them that whether I was in the community or out of it, they were a part of me and a part of my life. And I remember feeling incredibly broken and incredibly alone. Mm-hmm. Now I was surrounded by secular people who had absolutely no idea what I was talking about. Mm-hmm. And it really wasn't until I started to do this really, in retrospect, brave thing, which is go back to the girls that I was raised with in my youth group and tell them about the experiences I was having and then say, are any of you experiencing any of these things? And in these very whispered conversations, you know, over phone calls or in coffee shops in the corner of the room or, you know, in somebody's living room, very, very quiet and very alone, they would whisper back very similar stories. And I learned that these themes of sexual shame, fear, and anxiety were very common. And in fact, they were manifesting in many of our lives in ways that mimicked post-traumatic stress disorder. So nightmares, panic attacks, paranoia. I was taking pregnancy tests, though I wasn't having sex.
Wow. It goes deep.
And it turns out I wasn't the only one.
Yeah.
So this became the beginning of what eventually was 12 years of research in which I traveled around the country and I interviewed people who were raised in the purity movement that I mentioned. 20% of this country is white evangelical, 25% is evangelical. And this is a movement that really originated there, but that has had an impact way beyond itself.
Yeah, you see it in our American school system with abstinence-only education.
Thank you.
And so if you don't learn pleasure, you don't, and you're denying a huge part of yourself. So I love that. This is amazing. And I love that story and all these stories. And we're going to talk more about the stories that you've heard from other survivors with Brave Free Together. Great. But for now, we're going to take a break and help our sister in silence on the phone.
Yes.
Okay, so before we get started, even though I am a therapist, this is not therapy. Don't sue me. And this is just an advice show, confidential. And so I always say, to know a person's true self, you have to know their fake Insta. So caller, go ahead and unmute yourself and tell us, what's your Finsta?
Songs of Solomon. Hello.
Yes. Appropriately chosen.
A relevant queen.
Yes. Sister coming out of silence.
Oh, yes, girl. Keep the door in. Keep the bedroom door in. Okay. Well, Song of Solomon. My name is B and Linda's here. How can we change your life?
You've already changed my life. Let me just say, I was also, I'm black, but I was also raised a white evangelical. I went to both Catholic, my mom's Catholic and my dad's Methodist. So I went to both churches every Sunday, 7:30 mass, 8:30 service, sang in the choir, and was very involved at the Methodist church. So the whole idea of shame, specifically, I'm going to ask a question about really trying to own my sexuality and your thoughts around the fact that I still have a lot of shame around masturbation. So I didn't start masturbating until like later, and I'm still kind of figuring things out. I think of myself as being very liberal and, you know, we can talk about absolutely anything, but I won't masturbate if I'm not underneath the covers. I actually don't like masturbating in front of my husband unless like it's to please him, if that makes sense. I, you know, I will only masturbate, you know, I don't really talk about masturbation. And I don't think it means I don't enjoy it. Like I hear other people's masturbation stories and it sounds completely freeing and wonderful and an amazing way to relax. But I feel like when I masturbate, it's really this, you know, isolated, very, you know, kind of dark and not fun, but just about the fact that, you know, I need to feel a certain way. Let's get that. And then we're going to put everything up so nobody sees what's gone on here. I'll, you know, spray and then maybe take a nap and then we're done with that. And so how can I really start this process of being who I say I am sexually and start owning my sexuality in a way that does not feel shameful in its independence if it's not attached to what's happening with my husband? Or
it's for you.
Another example would be that we're trying to get pregnant and I had an abortion. I did. And I feel like I'm being punished because I haven't gotten pregnant yet. And so when we're having sex, that kind of rears its head. And so what do you do? How do you stop feeling that way? I'm not going to tear up on this phone, but it can be very painful. And then I don't want to put that pain on him. And I want to be this amazing sexual person that he knows, but that's not who I am to myself. And
oh, sister, you are not – you. This is a safe place for you and your pain. And it's just – we were talking about shame so much. It is a shame that the consequences of this, every single thing you mentioned, was that you should feel bad about all these sexual interactions. masturbation, getting pregnant, interracial sex. I mean, there's so many things that you feel bad about for this very natural thing. And that's the outcome. How do you feel?
You know, the reality is, Song of Solomon, I'm actually so glad you're talking about masturbation, because this was one of the most common things to come up in my interviews. Even though we have this impression that masturbation might be, you know, it's sort of bringing the equation down to one. So, you know, will there be as much shame? You know, actually what I found is that yes, there absolutely is. Mm-hmm. So first of all, I just want to normalize that and tell you that that is incredibly common. And I want to tell you a couple of stories about other people, just to kind of give you a little bit of context for others who are swimming in the same waters. So I have one interviewee who talks about her discomfort with masturbation being so great that particularly when she's enjoying it. Can I ask you, is that something for you where when you're experiencing pleasure, when you're enjoying it, the shame is greater?
Well, yeah, and it's almost like I rush it. Does that make I'm rushing through it because it's like, okay, all right, pipe down.
Yes, yeah. yes, exactly.
Don't let yourself get too excited.
Exactly. So there is this kind of, in the purity movement, which is a movement not of sexual abstinence, but of sexlessness, right? Being pure in your mind, your heart, your body, in every way. Mm-hmm. Sexual pleasure is seen as even more sinful. You know, this is a religion of the heart. As we said, your beliefs, your motivations matter. So what you're experiencing, you know, in your heart, in your body, in the moment becomes really important. So as an illustration, one of my interviewees actually went to her school counselor. She was attending a Bible college. She went to her school counselor and she confessed masturbation. You know, when you're in a Bible college, this is something you do.
Yeah.
And the counselor said, "Are you wet?"
Ugh.
Mm.
Right? Which to me just tells the whole story about what we really care about.
Wow.
Right? Is this going to be something where you're going to enjoy it? Or will you be filled with shame and misery and self-hatred?
Mm.
And it's somehow worse if you aren't hating yourself. Right? It's worse if you're experiencing pleasure, if you're experiencing joy. So one of my interviewees talks about how she tries to masturbate clinically, which I asked her to define. And she said, you know, she'll go into the shower where things are very clean and she will not think about anyone in particular or anything in particular. And she'll try to have no thoughts, no pleasure, no joy, and just service her body. And then, similar to what you said, you know, to me, then you can forget about it afterward. If you have this clinical experience, you can go and, you know, as you said, take a nap afterward and kind of erase the experience.
It never happened. Yeah.
That's right.
Colin, let me ask you, how do you feel before you masturbate? Like, how do you want to feel when you go into a session under covers, all that?
So it's literally about the release. I'm not thinking about feeling relaxed or happy, or it's like almost like a shot of caffeine, you know. And then what I'll find too is I enjoy porn, and so I like watching porn, but there's a piece of me that wants to watch it, and so that's why I masturbate. But it's not, I want to feel good, but not good because, hey, I'm a great person and I deserve to feel good. And I want to enjoy this. I need to get like a hit.
It's so interesting, right? Because if you're seeking release, why do you have so much anxiety around it? You know,
so much anxiety.
It's almost like
curtains closed.
Really, it's a hidden thing that you feel bad about. You know, but these acts are self-love. You know, and if you're talking about love, if this was an interpersonal relationship, you would say, where there is love, there is no confusion. And there's some learning that you have to do about what it really means to truly love yourself. And allowing yourself, more importantly, not like denying yourself things. There's almost nothing more normal than pleasure. Animals masturbate, birds, bees, fish, Bea Arthur, everybody. Everybody. It's the most natural thing in the world. And so when I say when there's love, there's no confusion, in your mind, there's a conflict between you deserving pleasure and you even supposed to be allowed to have pleasure. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of unlearning that you have to do. And you can almost treat yourself like a lady. Start to court yourself, because you're already shy with yourself. You're already hiding, you know? And like, if this was like a proper relationship after, you know, after you make love and it was really good, you just lay in the wet spot. Spend some time and try to introduce new rituals with how you look at it, and see if it's easier to get there. See if, because if the end result is that you feel good and then you feel shame, it still isn't going to feel as good as it could. And I think that's the goal. When you talk about wanting to reclaim your independence around sex and sexual attitudes, you want to feel good the whole time. If it doesn't feel good, you shouldn't be doing it. That's in any relationship. So develop new attitudes and habits around the situation. And I promise you, you'll be a lot more relaxed and allowing with your partner as well.
I want to offer an amendment to that, though. I think that idea of if it doesn't feel good, you shouldn't be doing it is really great when you actually can think your own thoughts and feel your own feelings.
You haven't been brainwashed by the patriarchy.
Which is something that has been robbed of many people who are raised in the purity culture.
That's a good point.
So, you know, when I hear your story, Song of Solomon, I hear that this experience of shame, right, what might tell someone what I am doing is shameful, right? That would be the logic of a healthy person. But when your logic has been so deeply shaped by these other influences, I want to talk about a couple other influences that I see in your story that I just want to call out. One is, you mentioned that you're a woman of color, and I will tell you from my experience as a white woman, it is very clear within the purity movement that some of the body policing is actually rooted in white supremacy, and some of the purity teachings and language are rooted in white supremacy. So, for example, there was a biracial young woman, high school student, who I believe just today or just yesterday it came out in the news that she won her school swim competition and then was disqualified, competing against almost all white girls, because in the swimsuit she was wearing, which was exactly the same as everyone else's swimsuit and given to her by the school, her swimsuit rode up more on her behind. And that was deemed sexual through the hypersexualization of women of color. That's right. And so, you know, for you growing up in what sounds like you grew up in kind of a white purity movement as a woman of color, you know, I imagine that this journey would have extra layers that I think it's important to acknowledge as part of your experience.
Yeah, absolutely. It's because at the same time that you're dealing with these sexual things, even just in life, there's no example of what beauty looks like, right? That's so right. I struggled a lot with whether or not I was, you know, even somebody that deserved to be seen as a mate or somebody that was attractive, which I think made me hyper focus on the things I could control, like my purity and the decisions I made around my sexuality. I definitely had a purity ring. I remember my best friend doesn't even know this. There was a girl that kissed me in high school. I went to spend a night over her house and she kissed me and I felt so bad the next day. I left early because I'd driven myself to her house. I left early around 5 a.m. and I went to my priest and did confession before 7:30 mass and told him what happened, because I just felt so shameful that I had been a part of something like that. I mean, not today, I prefer like lady porn, but still, like then the shame then, yeah, it was palpable, the shame. And then like, I still struggle with body issues. I'm 36 and married, and body issues along with trying to match my pleasure or even deny my pleasure so that my husband feels pleasurable. I really struggle there.
Yeah. So there's an experience called deconstruction. Is that a world that you're familiar with, the world of deconstruction?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yes.
So
I'm not teller audience.
Okay, fantastic. So a lot of us who are raised in these deeply religious communities, conservative religious communities, who have associated shame with all of these things, associated shame with being part of the LGBTQ community, with kissing a girl, with watching porn, with masturbation, with, you know, our bodies and their shape and form, have had to rewire ourselves, right? You know, that brain trap I was talking about between sexuality mm-hmm. and shame has been so fused that in order for us to actually have the healthy logic that you're talking about and the healthy, you know, feeling your feelings that is so important, you have to physically, first of all, identify what you were raised with. This isn't just the way the world is. This isn't just the way I am. It's not just fundamentally broken. I'm not just fundamentally broken. No. We were taught something,
right?
You know, purposefully.
Yep.
And so the first step is to identify what mm-hmm. you were raised with and some of the legacies on your adult life. Mm-hmm. And then mm-hmm. to do this work of deconstruction, pulling right. all those things apart, looking at them one at a time, saying, here's the shame. Here's the sexuality. Here's the, you know, relationship with my husband. Here's the
desire.
You know,
here's the,
right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All of these mm-hmm. things. Here's this narrative I learned about my body as, you know, through a racial lens. Here's this narrative I learned mm-hmm. about my body through a gender lens, you know, and pull them all apart, that deconstruction. And that period takes a really long time. And then very slowly, and it sounds to me like you're in the midst of that deconstruction, mm-hmm. Song of Solomon. Does that feel right?
That does feel right. Yeah. That absolutely feels right.
But the hope
I mean, I don't hide my vibrator anymore, which I think
okay.
is huge.
Progress.
You know, like baby step, but I mean, progress. It used to live in a drawer. That nobody ever went to. And then it lived under my pillow. And now it lives next to my, on my bedside table.
Yes.
Where she belongs.
Yay.
This should be your first love. Fuck a husband. My Laylo is my first, last priority. See, and this is great because it's baby steps, right? It really is a lot of unlearning and a lot of, again, new habits. So, I mean, that's really what really struck me is when you told me about your first same sex or same gender experience, you immediately went to mass and had to confess.
Yeah.
What if you, like, had told someone who, like, was experienced with this, who, like, held space? Well, how did it make you feel? How did you want to feel? Like, is it something you do again? And, you know, so same thing after you masturbate or after you have, like, a new sexual mm-hmm. experience. With her husband, instead of like confessing, get into it, gas yourself up, like, oh my god, like I felt lighter when I didn't expect like that, but look at me now, you know. It's like, you know, really talk to yourself again, because that's how new patterns are created, like thinking them, saying them, reading them,
that's
putting
right.
them in practice, making them real, because once you say it out loud, then it's real and you have to confront it, you know, you have to face it.
Yeah.
And the more you expose yourself to these things, they're not a big deal anymore.
Yeah, and that is the process that I would call reconstruction. Mm-hmm. And that's where I want to give you hope, right? You know, you are in a healthy process of deconstruction, right? You are making those baby steps. You are leaving that vibrator out. You're calling in and talking about these vulnerable stories, right? So you are clearly on the road to moving from deconstruction into reconstruction, which is where you start to be able to sit in some of the discomfort long enough, you know, with that baby step, not going all the way, just going one step above your comfort zone over and
then
over
you get comfortable. You get more and more comfortable.
Yeah.
And then you'll be at the top. You'll be at the top letting your freak flag fly.
Yay.
And holding Wave conversations like this for others.
Yes. Exactly. I mean, a lot of times in therapy, when people are like, why is it so much pain? Why is it so much punishment? Sometimes the purpose, which is no greater purpose, is you can help somebody else through it.
Yeah.
Once you're Absolutely. On the other side of it. And you can, girl. It's just more practice.
That's right. That's right.
More pleasure practice. So that's my prognosis. That's that's my prescription. Keep at it, sister. Was that helpful, Song of Solomon, my dear?
This was very, 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 very helpful. Even the context and explanation around the purity movement. I work in higher education. And so I realize the way the framework of the students that I serve and the way they talk about sex. And, you know, it's just this big spectrum as opposed to these really black and white areas that I grew up with. And it helps me realize, okay, you know, some things they say, and I'm like, okay, not so much. But other things, even if I'm trying to counsel them, in my head, I'm like, whoa, like you are a prude, or you do need to work on that, or you're not as liberal as you think. Mm-hmm. You are getting old. Mm-hmm. So it kind of helps there. But being able to understand the context around those things I feel and that shame. And honestly, the fact that it's not just me feeling this way, and there's actually research that shows I am a part of a systematic intentional
a
campaign
conspiracy to keep women from enjoying orgasm. Well, we say fuck that. Fuck the pleasure police. Yeah, I said it. What? I'm sorry. I'm just so.
But no, this was so this aroused. Was great
for justice for sexual
this is
justice.
Absolutely great.
Well, thank you so much for being open with us, for sharing your story with our audience, and of course with Linda. And if you want to know more about the purity movement, Linda, tell her what's your book.
Sure. It's called Pure, and the subtitle is Inside the Evangelical Movement That Shamed a Generation of Young Women and How I Broke Free. But I want to say that the title, for a long time, I really argued that it should be And How We Broke Free. And the reason is because I don't think we break free from this alone. I actually think we break free through conversations like this, through sacred story exchange. So we break free together.
Aww. Well, thank you again so much for calling in, and have a wonderful sexually liberated day.
Thank you, B, and thank you, Linda. Woohoo!
Thank you.
Thank you, Sasa.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Audience, thank you so much for joining us. It's not about being perfect. It's about being good to yourself. We like to call this the Power Hour. For your own Power Hour, make sure you sign up at The Difference. Till next time, this is the Be the Change podcast, recorded at Sono Studio in New York City. Thanks for listening.